I've read all kinds of things about memory that suggest that pupils don't use more than 5% of what they've actually got there, what they've got capability-wise. It's just that we don't pull all the right strings and we don't push all the right buttons and they don't make all those connections. And so I'm trying with reading. I do quite a bit of reading, and then I try and think, okay, now how can I put that into practice, and what difference does that make in the classroom? What can I try? It's still very much suck it and see. I'm still trying out lots and lots of different things, and if they don't work, I drop them. If they do work, I carry on. It's not desperately scientific. I am very, very interested in research and doing it properly. And I am doing a PhD, but in something different. I'm doing language acquisition and spontaneous pupil talk. And that's very, very specialised. This is just me being an experimental teacher. And so please don't expect me to come up with huge loads of kind of documents, or I definitely know that this is definitely true because blah, blah, blah. All I'm going to say is I've tried these things in the classroom and they've worked for the range of abilities that I'll show you, or with each example I'll say this worked when I tried it with such and such, and then it will be over to you, and hopefully there'll be some food for thought. I'm interested in memory skills at secondary school. They're not ever explicitly taught or focused on or made a deal of. I mean, I think we've been victims. I mean, it's a great thing, coursework. And the new styles of teaching things, the new ways of examining, but it now underplays the value of memory and developing people's memories, because they don't need to. They go into maths exams, they have a list of formulae. They get the periodic table when they go into science. Coursework in English doesn't involve them learning quotes. They just get the book out in front of them and refer to it. It's a different style of exam, and yet we need them to know about 2,000 words that they can engage with and use accurately and whatever. We do need memory, and it isn't taught, so we haven't got it anywhere else. Not a priority. And I think at primary, I'm seeing my children work quite hard with memory. They're learning their tables, and they're learning their spellings each week for a test. That disappears, except in languages, when you have the transition from Key Stage 3 to Key Stage 2 to Key Stage 3, and all of a sudden, that's not really focused on anymore. And they're just meant to take those skills from the primary knowledge that they've got and extend them. Now, actually, lots of pupils at primary don't get good. They still don't know their tables. We know that because we can look at their Key Stage 2 SATs results. They still haven't learned and internalised and automatised that knowledge. And the same with spellings. You know, you'll have parents come up to you and say, well, I'm worried about my child learning languages because they weren't very good at learning spellings when they're at primary school. And so, you know, it's not that they have those skills really well developed for all of them when they come up to us. And they do matter. We need them to learn the words in the first place. We then need them to retain them in their medium to long-term memories. And they don't, because they sit and do them on the bus. And then they cram them in well enough to do a vocab test, and then they go away and they've forgotten them by lunchtime. So we do need to get to retention. And we need to know how. And that's, you know, it's not an easy question to answer. And I don't pretend that I've actually got there totally. But I have made a few inroads, I hope. I've said three things, really. How are we going to make them better able to remember things more quickly and over a longer period of time? That's essentially my raison d'être. We need to know more about how memory works. We need to know more about learning styles, because learning styles affect the way pupils take in and retain information. So we need to look at the interplay between memory and learning styles. We then need to go, okay, right, we know that. That's really interesting what we've learned about memory. What does that mean in the classroom in MFL? What can we therefore do actively and practically to make this learning, this knowledge applicable? And then we need to involve the students, because at every stage, if they know why you're doing something, why you've introduced a certain activity, and then they are able to join you in that journey and reflect and give you feedback, then I think it makes the whole thing much more of a dialogic experience. They are engaged in the learning and evaluating how they learn best, and they need to know more about themselves as learners. So those three things, really. Now, in terms of knowing more about memory, I don't know huge amounts about memory, but I needed to get started quickly. I really wanted to have a whole school impact. I suddenly felt a burning desire for languages to be shouting about doing something for the rest of the curriculum, because it actually isn't true. All of the stuff I said, we've gone to coursework and this, that and the other, pupils do still need to remember things in other subjects. It's just that other subjects, perhaps they don't need it enough for them to really focus on building a skills base. But they do still need it, because they get very stressed when it comes to SATs, and they do suddenly start sitting down and trying to learn things and to revise, and then when they get to GCSEs, they do so again. So I thought, I'm going to... This was last Christmas holiday. This is going to sound very sad. I started following links on the website, and I started reading about memory, and I got hold of a website called howtolearn.com, and it is mentioned in the booklet, www.howtolearn.com. And I read, and it was an American website, and you think, ooh, pinch of salt, I'm going to take this with, because it talks about, you know, amazing things that are going to happen. But somewhat sceptically, I downloaded a kind of book, a 200-page book to read, found it really fascinating, followed some links from there, and then I thought, well, I know that there are loads of other things that I can find out about memory, but actually I haven't got time. I need to get in there. I need to be talking to the year nines. It's the right time for me to talk to them. I then need to, you know, go and talk to a year eight parents' evening. Then I'm going to talk to year 11. I wanted somehow languages, the profile of languages, to be raised whole school by me getting in on, hey, languages has got something to tell the whole school about memory and about revision skills and about how to learn. And it was really powerful, actually. And now I am called upon, whenever somebody wants a revision assembly or a how to learn or a learning to learn or something, you know, Mitchell, could you come and talk to parents? I've talked to three year groups of parents this term, all about this stuff. And when I made those booklets, because it says a booklet for parents and students, I didn't make it specially for you, I was practically mobbed at the end. And the first time I only had 30 copies, and there were 140 parents in the audience, so I could tell they were going to want these things as soon as I said, and I have a handout. There were people coming down to get them. Which is not because of me, it's because the stuff is obviously fulfilling a need. Parents do feel that they want to be able to help their children learn better and remember stuff. And it was actually responding to an anxiety there that was very real amongst parents. So I did this assembly, which I have no objection to anybody having, but just imagine it, this is me doing this as year nine. I'm not going to do all of it, but I wanted to sort of set the scene. So I told them a few things we know about the brain. In some ways, they're quite... Well, I'll tell you when they're dodgy anyway. How to activate the brain. This notion, and it's just to give them a snapshot, really. This is to hook them in. In fact, basically, this first slide is to do this, to activate their brains. Because we have... And I think that's what the Key Stage 3 strategy was all about with starters. The whole idea of a starter is that it engages interest, it focuses the mind, it gets everybody just thinking. And if it doesn't do that, well, it's not a good starter. But the new car syndrome is if you decide in your mind, if you're going out to buy a new car, and you're thinking about it, you know, you haven't actually gone away to the garage to buy it, but you're thinking, I think I'm going to have a blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to have a red one. All of a sudden, once you have made that decision, everything you see is red. All the cars on the road are suddenly red, and you see a million red cars because your brain has been switched on to red, to the notion of red. And that is a bit of our brain, I'm going to not point where it is, but it's in here somewhere, called the reticular activating system. And as students, they need to be aware of it, but as teachers, we need to be aware that in the first 2 or 3 minutes in the lesson, we need to activate that bit of their brains. We need to switch them on. Because if the lesson starts with, you know, them just kind of mooching and still talking about lunch, and then there's a kind of, oh, well, today we are going to learn, and everyone's going, yeah, boring, boring. Actually, they're not going to ever have a big sort of impact start to their learning. And that's the switch-on button, and we have to find some way of doing it. Ways of doing that are humour, the humorous, the bizarre, the active, the strange, the interactive, it's got to be something where the pupils are all drawn in. They all have to be pulled in to actively thinking. So that was one thing. And I just told them about that to really get them thinking. The magic number 7. This is actually rubbish. but again, I don't tell them that it's true. After a while, I tell them that it's kind of urban myth. But the notion is that in Sweden, they had number plates that were 7 digits. And then they ran out, like we did, and we had to change our system. And so they put an 8th one on. Or an 8th or an 9th, I don't know. And then all of a sudden there was apparently a massive explosion in the crime rate. Crime really went up. And they investigated what on earth could be happening. Why, you know, the malaise in society, all of a sudden, where's it come from? And apparently they discovered that it was just because people weren't able to remember more than 7 bits of information at once. And so they weren't able to report these getaway cars. I mean, ridiculous story. It's not true. But again, there's a bizarre, there's a humorous, there's a switch on the reticular activating system, pull everybody in. Apparently there's something magic about 7, remembering 7 things. We could try an experiment with kind of phone numbers and things like that. Mobile, we do know though, mobile phone numbers, really quite challenging for all of us to remember. We have to work hard, they don't just go in like that. Whereas my landline number, you know, I've moved house about 5 times in the last 5 years and I know them all, still I know them all. Whereas my mobile number, I really did have to try. So there's something about that. And then there's primacy and recency. We remember stuff that we've heard at the start, and we remember things that we've heard at the end, but the middle we find really difficult. If I read you 20 items now, I know without a shadow of a doubt you'd remember the first 5 and the last 5. And depending on how good your retention, your memories are, somewhere in the middle, you know, someone might remember all 20, if they were really good. You know, others of you would be anywhere between 3 and 10 out of those middle 10. And things get lost in the middle. And you can share that with pupils and say, and that can affect teaching in a couple of ways. For example, you might think, oh my goodness, I've got year 11 double period. I'm going to actually, and that's 100 minutes for us. If they're going to remember the first, and of course we know your natural limits, average concentration span is your age plus or minus 2 years. So if my year 11 pupils are 15, that means 15 minutes or 13 minutes, between 13 and 17 minutes, I'll have lost their concentration. It doesn't get much better for adults either, so I'm on a loser already. But thinking like, what am I going to do with my 100 minutes? If I've only got 15 minutes, and then I might hope that perhaps right at the end of the lesson they'll pick up again, means I've got an awful lot of downtime in the middle where they're not really going to be actively taking knowledge on. So how am I going to structure my lesson? What am I going to do to make the most out of my time? Well, you know, I've taken with year 11 100-minute lessons. I've taken to, I know, it's the graveyard slot after lunch, isn't it? I've taken to making 4 separate lessons out of it, of 25 minutes. And I actually get them to move. And I do a carousel. We've all heard of those. But I actually get them to see them, and I label them as lesson 1, lesson 2, lesson 3, lesson 4, and they rotate around the room so that they actually do a lesson of 25 minutes. They get up, they move, and in the moving they take in more oxygen and they just have a little stretch, and then they sit back down again, and it's refreshed the concentration. And that's directly influenced by my reading about this. Then you've also got telling them how to revise things and saying, you know, chunk it smaller. And also remember the primacy and recency. If I've given you 20 words to learn, are you going to learn them in the order I've given you them? Or are you going to restructure that to say, well, I know those words, and I know those words, so I'll put those in the middle because I already know those ones, and I know that in the middle, I'm not going to remember so well. I'm going to put the hardest words at the top and the bottom. And then you've got your primacy and recency, and you're noticing, your ability to notice and pick up and engage with is enhanced at the top of a list and the bottom of a list. So put the hard words at the top and bottom and put the easy cognates in the middle. And to actually get pupils to kind of accept that as a theory and to work with it and try it with you and say, oh, yes, that actually works. I do remember those hard words now. So anyway, you can see how the buzzer went before I got through this assembly and how all the heads of year were going, period one's already started. So what's a learning style? I like this definition. it's just a preference. It doesn't mean you can only take the information in that, way. In fact, my whole feeling is that we mustn't get hung up on, you know, I know there are schools that go, oh, you know, VAK, and they give people different little cards to hold, and you could go into a class if you're a cover teacher and say, hold your cards up, and you go, all right, I've got kind of 30% visual, ooh, you know, 60% kinesthetic, 10% auditory. Okay, that's interesting. I don't hold with that. I think it's good for the learners to know their natural preferences, but then I want to give them ways of extending into the other areas, because we all need as much of a mixture and a balance as we can. So I tell them that. And then, these things, I'm sure I'm not saying that anything that's new here. Visual learners, they obviously learn best by seeing. Not really rocket science there. Yes, they're your ones that like order, that they organise their work. They're the ones where you put their books to the top to mark, because they like to lay their work out nicely, and then you go, oh dear, I can't face that one now. I'm going to have at least 3 bars of chocolate before I get near that book. That's the other ones. But neat and orderly are your visual learners. They're good at speech. They speak quite quickly. They don't have a problem stringing sentences together and coming out with things, sounding quite eloquent. They hold their heads up higher in the classroom. They don't generally tend to go like that. Good spellers. They can plan ahead. That good long-range planners, I mean, I'm not bothered whether they're planning for next week, what they're doing, but you know, in a lesson, they can see where they're... Or in a piece of work, you can see that they've thought about where they're going to go with that piece of work and have actually thought paragraphing or thought logical sense and hung it together. They memorise by visuals, and they like to know where they're going. But they do have trouble remembering verbal instructions, and I am like this. I don't like people telling me stuff. I immediately want to commit it to paper. You know, I have to be writing things down to feel like I'm learning. Even if someone says to me, and I'm the worst person, when someone goes, don't bother about making notes, it's all on my PowerPoint, it's all on my handouts, you can have it at the end. I go, I don't care. It's part of the way I like to learn, is writing stuff down. So that I can recognise myself in that. Auditory, they're happy in the oral environment. They can take in information like that. They do like being entertained with stories that go on. They can keep their focus on you. Auditory learners look at the ear level, you know, so because they are really focusing on the mouth, on the ears, on things that are coming out. They're kind of looking like that. Kinesthetic learners look down, particularly when they communicate with you. They're good storytellers, they might be good joke tellers. I mean, I think we can all spot, they're often the musicians, but not always. But I think people that talk to themselves, you know, yeah, I thought that was just madness, but no, it's good. It's just auditory learning style. I did go on www.howtolearn.com, you can do a simple inventory. It takes about 1 minute. I found it fun to do that. I haven't made all my children do it, or my pupils, but I found it fun for me, and it showed that I was 30% auditory preference. Not surprised if you saw me dance this morning that I'm not at all kinesthetic. No kidding. But visual was the other 60%. I am also quite distracted by noise, but I'm also sometimes very good at filtering it out. So, you know, there's the interplay of things there. May have project, likes jokes better than comics. Okay, and then we've got the kinesthetic ones. They need to move. They're often good at physical coordination. They speak more slowly. Memorises by moving around. Gestures a lot. Doesn't mind clutter. Action words. When they speak, they talk about doing rather than I see what you mean. I see what you mean is a very visual learner thing to say. And we can all do this. This is what I did in assembly. But we, you know, imagine a bacon sandwich. Some of us will see a picture of one, the last one we ate. I'm a vegetarian, so that was a long time ago. But I can still see, I create a picture in my mind around about there of what one looks like. Other people hear it cooking, and other people taste it. And if you're hearing it, the sounds of it making, you're very strong auditory. These are the ones that perhaps recognise themselves the least. Everyone that's tasted bacon just then in their mouth has got some kinesthetic preference showing through. But, or maybe you're just hungry and you didn't like your lunch. It could be that too. The key this was the really important bit to me, because all of the stuff so far, I'd heard somewhere. And okay, I maybe collated it and I thought about it a bit more, but I'd heard all that stuff. This was a bit of a killer for me, because the key to get the most out of your learning strategy, and this is regardless of preference, is to match what you do with the way you're going to be tested. And I know talking about testing is just a bit depressing, but there is an end product, and we do have to raise attainment. And all of the time, we're trying to help learners be successful. Almost, think about it, GCSEs are almost all about producing the written word in response to other written words. And that favours your visual learner. And that's why our visual learners are the ones that achieve fantastic results, and our other ones are the ones that struggle and end up going down into bottom sets. And it's not nice, but actually, those of us who do not have a natural visual learning preference have to develop our visual style. We have to develop our visual memory. If we don't make those links naturally, we have to make them. We have to make it better. And what was really good about reading this was, first, it was depressing, because I recognise why the problems are happening. But then it was like, well, you can actually make your visual memory better. And so this is what I tried to say to the United. You can find your visual memory. You can actually make a connection between your eyes and the bit in your brain where your visual memory is stored. And this sounds quite weird. You might have to go on a little believing journey with me in a minute. There is a natural eye-brain connection. Now, I have read a little bit around. I believe that that research is quite robust, actually, that that exists. And we need to find it. Now, if you've ever done a sort of little, you know how we do testing of pupils, and we sometimes do it individually, and we're saying, you know, ¿cómo te llamas? Or whatever we're saying. If they forget the answer, you know, they can't retrieve the information that they're looking for. I mean, I had such an amazing example of this where it was so clear. And I was testing him. He obviously hadn't prepared at all. He'd only busked on what we'd done in the lessons, and he hadn't gone and looked at it at all. I could see that. Quite a bright boy, but just hadn't bothered revising. And he sat there, and all of a sudden, his eyes went, and he was looking for that information. Naturally, he was looking for it where his, that is the eye-brain connection. Our visual memories, for all of us, are stored. Most of us are up to the right. And I know that. I know that when I was in exams, I can almost feel myself and remember doing it. In exams, I'm thinking, blah, 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 Hitler, blah, blah, blah. Thinking, oh, what was that date? And you go like that. And you're looking for it. We used to call it mind's eye. That's a kind of old-fashioned term for it. But now they're calling it the natural eye-brain connection. Not all children look up to the right. Some look up and straight on. It's always up, though. Visual is always up. Up to the left can be something. Now, I tried this on my children as a method for finding where theirs are. So you have to ask questions that get them to picture something and describe a picture to you. So I asked her to describe her favourite horse. Not that we have loads of horses, but she goes to ride them at the stable. And, you know, describe to me what it looks like. And immediately, her eyes up to the right, creating a picture and describing what she's seeing. Now, if you take special measures to write information there and put it there and store it there, you can retrieve it more easily. You are helping pupils to make a link with their visual memory. And so I've done it with whole classes. We've all found where our visual memory is. We've had hilarity doing that. And then I've actually given them some strategies to say, for example, you know, 10 words that I want you to learn. And this is all written down in the booklet, so really don't make notes. Unless you like to. And my daughter was getting really, really bad spelling results. She's not a natural visual learner. And so I said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make little flashcards of the word. So write that word out, big, hold it up there where your visual memory is. It would be up there if you were up there. Hold it up there. Trace over the letters. Look at it for a couple more seconds. Take a picture with your eyes. Your eyes are a camera. Take a picture. Make sure when your eyes are closed, you can still see the word there. Now put it down and move on to the next one. Okay, I did that with her because she was crying about her spellings and everyone else was getting 9 out of 9 and she wasn't. It improved immediately. And now we don't do it. Now she makes the own links by herself. We don't do that the whole time. We did it for about a month and a half. Her spellings have improved. So it's anecdotal. plus reading. But I would try. It's there. Pupils have said yes, it's made a difference to them. I've seen it make a difference to classes. We do have like, if we're having a carousel lesson, then one of the activities will be learning the vocabulary. I try not to set learning homeworks at home, because at the moment pupils aren't that motivated. They don't prioritise it enough because they don't have to hand anything in. So I do written homeworks at home, or speaking. They could speak onto a tape, whatever. Tape. Who uses tapes? Anyway, they do learning activities, 10 minutes solid vocabulary learning using the visual learning method. And it really does work, and they really do improve. Okay, music. I sometimes get them to learn things while they're listening to something baroque-y. I buy into that. I'm not really terribly sure about it, but a bit of Mozart, a bit of Bach, on in the background when they're doing a learning activity. I tell them to use it at home. They can do what they like at home. But it is meant to slow your heart rate to about 70, which is the optimum for taking in information, apparently. It means that you're relaxed but alert. I wonder how many of us can say that about ourselves this afternoon. Okay, so now that assembly, I have to tell you, in my school, assemblies are not viewed like as an amazingly positive thing. People don't go, "Oh, I really love assemblies. Let's go, everybody." I not only had, and staff, by and large, you don't kind of have staff coming up and going, "Oh, really great assembly. I loved it." Usually they're still asleep. They take their register and then they go, "Oh, what have I got to do period one today?" And their minds go off. But I had pupils for a week and a half coming past me in the corridor and saying, "Liz, I really like that assembly, and I've really thought about it, and I think I'm a such and such, and I'm really working on my, and I tried that on my mum, and she's up to the right," all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's good. So, what does it look like in the classroom? Here we go. How long have I got? Half an hour. Yes. Okay. Putting it into practice. All of these things here come from that reading and that knowledge, I call it knowledge or whatever, thoughts, ideas, feelings about what might work. All of these ideas are things that I've tried in the last 18 months, 2 years. I do think we do need to choose our words really carefully. And what I mean by that is I wouldn't actually advocate that pupils learn 14 pieces of furniture in the bedroom with that method of, spelling each one perfectly and whatever. I just think let's prioritise for your middle to lower ability, let's prioritise the words that are truly important, that truly count. Because those are a few verbs, some time expressions, opinion structures, nouns. Well, they come and go really, don't they? These are apparently the 100 most common words in any language. So obviously they're listed in English here, but the German equivalent would be the 100 most used in German. I got that out of that. Tony, whoever he is, Buffon, Using Memory, blah, blah, blah. Using Your Memory, a book by him. Again, if you think, I would like that slide, yes, it's fine. You can have it. I gave that to Year 11 German, to say how many of these 100 words these might be better than all the other 1900 that are supposedly on the curriculum. I want to have them really sure about words that count, rather than half sure about lots of words whose validity I sort of question. I mean, you ask me what broom is in Spanish and I might not know, but hey, I haven't needed to use it. And if I did, I would go, it's that thing, cleaning the floor thing, it's made of wood. Trying to put some substance on that, I produced this for middle to lower ability, Key Stage 3 Spanish. Now, I think that would do most of what you need for GCSE. And I've got Year 8, I teach Set 5 out of 6. They're not desperately able. I've got them using that actively. They've memorised bits of it, and we work on memorising bits of it. This is what I would like them to know off by heart by the end of the year. Because you can do past tense and past, future and present with this. You can give opinions with this, and you can give reasons with this. Well, that's GCSE, isn't it, really? Yeah, you might need a few words, and I've got a vocabulary book for them to pull those words out of. And sometimes I say, look, out of all these foods that we've learned, Choose the 10 foods that are important to you and your family. Choose the ones that you like and the ones that you hate. And forget all the other foods, because if you go to a restaurant, you're going to choose the food you like, aren't you? You're not going to want to understand the entire menu. And it's always good for balance to have foods that you don't like, because, you know, in GCSE, you don't just say what you do, you say what you don't, because that gives you twice as many points. And this is the way I'm approaching it. I do think they need all of the pronouns. I do think they need to know those three verbs off by heart, totally. I also want them to know the paradigm of AR verbs, but I'll build that in later. I'm still saying you could do a heck of a lot if you only knew this. And again, you can have that if you think it'd be useful. I've also shared with them and with the whole department, this is the skills that I want us to build this year. I want to be able to say the word, and I want you to know what it means. That's different memory from I'm going to show you the word, and I want you to know what it means. Now, I have stopped presenting just the auditory version of the word. Why was that that we did that anyway? For pronunciation reasons, wasn't it? Because if they see it written down, then they're going to pronounce it wrongly. Not really. If you first of all teach them how pronunciation in Spanish, I take Spanish as an example, is different from pronunciation in English. I think you can teach pupils the 16 main sounds in Spanish that are different from the 16 main sounds in English. You know, I even question the validity of endless alphabet learning. You know, the letter combinations that make different sounds in Spanish. Ji, je, you know, and then go, ga, gu. I think they need to know that. And when they know that, they can read something. And then you can just present the picture with the Spanish word. And when you say the Spanish word, they can say the Spanish word too. They're not going to start saying something different because they've internalized the ways of pronouncing. Anyway, I do want them to be able to spell, but only words on that core language sheet. That's the only ones I'm ever going to test for spelling with my lower ability. And I want to get to the point where we have speedy recall. And that's where I use the music, and that's where, you know, all of the other things come in, just to make it quicker. Because we all need to be able to, you know, with numbers, if you're in a listening comprehension, you don't get them 50 times with the teacher kind of, you know, 22. You know, it's coming at them quickly and they've got to know. And that's all about speed of processing. And I think we need to get activities together that get them to. So those are the memory focuses. Pronunciation. They can repeat it correctly after me. Not everyone can do that. I think we need to recognise that. That's actually a skill. And not everyone can do it. Two, they need to retain the pronunciation so that if we go into the next lesson, they don't actually completely back away from how it's really pronounced and mangle it. Can they retain the sounds? And then, can they pronounce accurately from a text without my help? Even if they've never seen those words before, can they make the links? And that's what I want year 8 bottom set to get to. See, I'm quite ambitious. But anyway, say whole sentences from visual prompts. I think sentence building is key, and I think at every single level, whatever lesson we're doing, if we don't progress to good sentence building, then we've missed a trick. We must show progression in the lessons. They need to be able to adapt sentences, and they need to use the key words to build new sentences. So, what else did I want to do with that? I can't remember. Okay, sound spelling associations. I have a German one. I'm just going to show you the Spanish one quickly. I'm teaching this year a new course called, which doesn't even really exist, called the International Award, the ASLAN International Award. Does anyone know it? It's sort of, I want everyone to do a language in my school, but GCSE isn't appropriate for everybody. So some of them, a small group of about 18, is doing ASLAN International. It doesn't have a curriculum, you just write your own. And it's portfolio assessed, and you have to go to the country, and it's about cultural links as well as language. But I want to teach them some language, and they've never learnt any Spanish before. We're having a fresh start because they came to rock bottom with French. They just ground into those bottom sets where they still didn't know what je suis meant. And you know, you've probably seen those learners. They exist in every school, I'm sure. And I had those, and I thought, we've got to start again with a fresh look. So, this is our guide to pronunciation. And they have this, and they keep this. And so you've got, you know, a is pronounced like a, e, elefante. And we learn it with a word. Sometimes we do it with a gesture. Even year 10, they like to do the gestures as well. So we go, idea. And we go, araña. And we go, elefante. And they do like it. But it means that when they come up against a text, and I practiced this with them this week. So We'd done that, we'd practiced the sounds, we'd got the ideas that we had, you know, CI in Spanish is fi, very important to know. CE in Spanish is fe, very important to know because it comes up all the time. Double L is y. Okay? So they could read that text with really good Spanish pronunciation, just from the work we'd done previously. And the sense of achievement, because they could tell they sounded Spanish, they could really, miss, this is incredible, I can read this. I wasn't even going for comprehension, I just want them to be able to take a text, I'm going to give them bits of El País, and say, read that out loud to me. Because the fact that they can, you know, who says languages can't be sophisticated after lesson three? I think they really can. And I think the sound, anyway, I digress, I'm getting onto one of my hobby horses now, but... Then I told them what it meant, and then they wrote their own text. And that was lesson one for them. Lesson one in Spanish. And these are the, you know, the failures. These are the failures. They feel themselves to be failures. They came in, they went, Miss, I don't know what you're doing with me. I can't learn languages. I'm just rubbish, I was. And so it's working then. Okay, now that was there was a German example, just so that you know what you're missing. And what was under that one? Oh, yeah, nothing very exciting. Don't worry. Right, drama. Okay. It might take a couple of seconds to load that one. I had a drama student last year come to me and say, I've been asked to do cross-curricular links with another subject teacher. I've chosen you because I've asked several other people and they didn't want to or something, or they had too much on. Like, hello, and I haven't got too much going on. I was a bit intrigued, though, and I thought, yes, I've always thought drama's got more potential than I'm getting out of it. And I love the notion that you can do cross-curricular stuff and you can borrow terminology from other subjects that they really like and feel really successful in. I think you can get a positive vibe just by calling the activity the same activity that they call it in drama and by them perceiving it as the same thing. You know, and we want all of the advantages that we can have because languages are harder than drama. I'm sorry. It's harder for them to progress, and we need to, you know, tap into the good stuff. So in drama, they have something they call physical theatre. Sounds really posh, doesn't it? Sounds really sort of sophisticated. And this was bottom set year seven, and so we tried something. Now, physical theatre, all it means is montage, basically. You know, the pupils make a physical montage of a phrase you've given them, or a piece of vocabulary. So this was Vivo en las montañas. Now, I agree that you wouldn't necessarily know that, because, you know, there's a limit to what they can do. But this was bottom set year seven, we were doing where you live, and I said, right, I'm going to give you a phrase, I'm going to count you down five, cinco, cuatro, tres, dos, uno, and you must be totally freeze-framed, and I must be able to, you know, and we had then a sort of pupil that would go, yes, that's good, and would go around the class going, vivo en las montañas, you know, and judging whether they were good. But the buzz that's created when you say, vivo en las montañas, and they're going, oh, hang on, what does that mean? Is it, oh, yes, yeah, it's like mountains, is it? Oh, yeah, live. Okay, well, what are we going to do for that then? Okay, well, you go here, you stand here. All in the space of countdown from five, phenomenal. And I know it's only responding, but it does test their comprehension. And it was what I could hear them saying to each other that was really good. And, of course, you could do different things. Okay, hot seating, that's a drama term. That's actually from the drama curriculum. And so is physical theatre. They're called drama techniques. So I borrowed it, hot seating. Sounds good. I'd previously used hot seating as well in my own way, but this was a nice one that I arrived at with her. They had something to wear, they had a character to be, and they had to say their sentence with their prop or whatever, with the tone of voice. So this guy was something like, me gusta vivir en la playa. Obviously, he's wearing his sunglasses. This one was, me gusta vivir en el barrio. Now, the Y's got a tie on. It was that we decided that barrio sounded a bit like Barry, and that Barry might live in the barrio, and this could be Barry, and he would wear a tie. Now, we concocted a little story to make a sort of auditory link with the word barrio and Barry. He's never forgotten that phrase. I think we underestimate the value of props, the value of physical things that place us specially in that thing and hook you in. They said, this one was, he's holding up a picture of two fish and he was something like, vivo junto al río, I live next to the river of all ridiculous sentences. I mean, I've reconsidered actually now whether I would want to teach those exact sentences, but, you know, it helped him remember it. And I said, why are you remembering that? Well, because I was holding the prop, was all he could say. Really? I'll give you props every time then. Fantastic. More things with props. Also, puppets. Getting them to be able, I mean, this is obviously something I'm sure you've done, but getting them to feel that they can lose themselves and be somebody else, they actually, you know, if I tell them that that puppet is Spanish and has a Spanish name, they will start trying to sound Spanish because they're playing a character. And yet, sometimes in the classroom, they don't really try with the pronunciation. And you think, why aren't you trying to sound Spanish? And it's because they feel like they're just being Dave or Johnny. If you tell them that they're Pedro, and that, you know, whoever it is, that little character, it worked really well. And it did make the word stick. Role play. Okay, so moving on. That was a bottom set. This is top set year 8, German. And they've just started German in year 8. And so this was about halfway through the year. This is a, if anyone might recognise it, this is Logo 1. Bog standard. Are you saying yes? Bog standard sort of role play scenario. Oh my God, how boring is that? You know, I love role play, but I thought, I think we can get more out of role play because sometimes it's a bit stilted and you feel a bit embarrassed doing it. I do. So, these are on the wrong way around, sorry, because they would fit better that way. I asked the drama teacher to help me with characterization. I said, could we say we're doing characterization in this as our drama technique? She said, oh yes. And I said, well, I'd want them to be quite one-dimensional or very simple characters, because I wouldn't want that to interfere. I don't want them getting psychologically, you know, into the character so much that they forget about the German, but I do want it to have an impact. So she came up with these things. So we've got things like stupid, laughs a lot, younger than the other people in the group. We've got confident, speaks very loudly. You know, these are very just, you know, caricatures. We've got shy, speaks very quietly. Very energetic, moves a lot. likes to order people about, always interrupts. So just very sort of basic characters. And then they did their same thing. They wrote their role play, but they had their characters. They knew what characters they were, and they came up and chose one at random. And they first of all had to... These were new words to them, so they first of all had to work out for themselves with the dictionary what the characterizations were, and then they started putting themselves into characters and writing the script themselves, like you would normally do for a role play. Then I told them to memorize them, practice them in character, memorize them, and then we videoed them. The video, my quality of videoing is not phenomenal, but I'm just going to play you the first one, just so you can get a sense of, is this in any way more kind of a real, authentic type role play than you would sometimes get when they don't have character? Because for me it really was, but maybe you generate lots of excitement when you do it. That was möchtest du schwimmen gehen? Okay. Obviously this one was the very enthusiastic sort of rather silly one that laughs a lot, and she was the very shy one. What they actually, I think, managed to convey quite a lot about peer, about, you know, sort of interactions in a social group where someone really does get left out, and it was clear that things about that preoccupy them about school life were actually coming out through their German, and it was interesting to talk about that with them later. I know that's not a brilliant example, you can't really see so well. The drama teacher for her research wanted to ask them if they'd enjoyed that way of learning and why they thought it was effective. I'm only going to play you about a minute of what they said. They obviously know they're being videoed, they're a bit...
Firstly, quite easy to enjoy doing this project. Yes, sir. But you learn from what you're watching.
You'll hear the next boy more clearly.
It was kind of like kinesthetic learning, so you had to do it, and I think that helped me learn German better than doing worksheet, because I'm doing something, so I'm getting it in my memory by myself rather than worksheet.
So he said, I'm getting it in my memory by myself. You know, obviously they're just speaking, that you know, they're just off the top of their head. They haven't thought about their answers. But you know, that boy in particular is somebody that finds it quite difficult to sit still. And yet he is an excellent dramatical person who had no trouble memorising lines. When he saw it as a play, absolutely no trouble. And that was interesting for me. Okay, so... link word, oh, very quickly on this. You've probably seen this before. Have you seen this before? Joe told us to start at 1:40, so that means we should be 10 minutes adrift of where we were going to be. So I'm going to definitely finish at 2:40, okay? This idea, are people familiar with that whole sort of making... saying what it sounds like in English to you, creating a humorous picture that helps you fix what that word is. I mean, a really simple example would be, I mean, that's not my favourite, to be honest, and this is even more disgusting, but sometimes I put this one in because it's quite grotesque. I mean, what a convoluted way of remembering the word d'accord. And for some of us, it's just so many steps too far. I mean, for me, I go, d'accord equals okay. On a page, I'm a visual learner, I've memorised it. But we have to acknowledge that some people need quite a lot more help. The grotesque has a very, very strong memory-enhancing effect. Now, obviously, we have the bounds of decency, and things in our classrooms, and we mustn't be too grotesque, but nevertheless, humour and the grotesque. I mean, poulet, for example, two things a chicken does, right? And then you go, oh, and they go, poulet, woohoo, it's really funny, and then they remember that that's a chicken forever and ever. You know, even if you have to work harder, this is not so easy. I mean, that's a God-given one, but das Besteck, which means cutlery, you know, I had them pretending that they were stabbing with a steak knife, because there was a sort of auditory connection there. Their steak that was on the plate, we were going, Besteck, Besteck, Besteck. And then I asked them 3 days later, we did nothing on that word, asked them 3 days later if they knew what das Besteck was, and they did. And then we had this one, das Geschirr, and I said, God, look at that sheer mound of food on that massive plate. And the sheer... yeah, I'm using the sheer there, obviously, deliberately to go here. They then connected the two things, sheer pile of food on plate, because sheer means crockery. There you go. Now, you have to... sometimes these things come to you while you're teaching. Sometimes it's nice to have thought them out in advance.
Rachel, haven't you always found, I found as a language learner, the hardest things in the world to remember are the three different types of cutlery?
Oh my God, yes.
I must be, I've never been a learner until I've actually held them and needed to complain about it at a restaurant. Always get your knife mixed up with your fork or your spoon. They're really hard to get straight in mind.
Yeah, and I got them to highlight. Absolutely. Yeah, no, and I got them to highlight the words that they found most difficult, first of all. And we used those to try and find... you're not going to want to find an association in your head for words that you can really easily remember. It's only the hard ones that look nothing like the English. You've got no help. You've got no hook. Nothing to help you at all. So, songs and articulate structures. I've done this one before, so I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to do this one for past tense. If you've got a French class that can't do the perfect tense... then learn this song and they will always know this tense forever and ever. They can do their own verses to it. There are so many verses and we made them up. A teacher in my department made this up. Qu'est-ce que tu as fait lundi dernier? Je suis allée en France et j'ai mangé des bananes avec mes copains. Oh la la la, oh la la la, oh la 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 la. You can go to Tuesday and you see, look, the weirder, the more humorous, the better. Now they're going to remember the structures here. So we had group singing. So we had you on Monday's group, you on Tuesday's group. Learn that for heart. Yeah, sort of going around the class singing it. Eventually, I won a sheep who had acne. Lovely. You know, these sentences are all from the song. Can you write them in French? So you then kind of pull out the language that you need. which is fairly good language. Now try the using section A to write those sentences. So then showing them how they can use those structures to extend onto other things. If I hadn't had that song, there's no way I would have got bottom set year 8 to level 5 the year before last. That was it. That was my strategy. Actions and miming, bog standard stuff, get them to suggest the actions. So, you know, if you're learning collaboratively with the class and you go, Jamie, give me an action for train, and he'll go, right, and everyone goes, oh, el tren. And then you go, you know, autobus or whatever. And they just suggest them and then they do them. Also, when you have them respond true and false to things, when you're in the early stages of learning, give them a funny gesture to do that's not, so that they're not necessarily just saying c'est vrai, c'est faux. You say, if it's faux, I want you to do this. You know, or this. And actually getting them to physically move in a weird way as they're doing the gesture, it's great. And then change the gesture on them halfway through. Keep them alive and awake. Their memories need to stay awake. Their brains need to stay awake. So that's actions and miming. Oh, personalising, I think this is really powerful. Really powerful. With any sort of set, give the person in your class, so the name comes on, and of course that gets everyone's attention because they don't know whether it's going to be them. Ask them a question. When they've answered it, fix it to that person. So if you say, what animals have you got? And they say, you know, j'ai du lapin or something. You say, Connor. You link Connor to the idea of j'ai du lapin. And you try and involve the whole class. You back off and you go, Connor, qu'est-ce qu'il a? De lapin. J'ai du lapin. And then you move on. And by the end, they can even remember who has what. Now, that's powerful memory. Then you know that they're going to remember the language if they can even remember who's got it. It's making it, it's giving it some ownership. And it's heightening the reticular activating bit. Because it's pinning it to an individual. It's making them feel special. It's giving them a special responsibility. But it's also signalling to the rest of the class that you're linking two things together. And they go, how do you remember that? Oh, I remember it because it was Connor's. You know, he's my best friend, so I'm going to remember what he said. Or I remember it because of Connor's. I can't stand that boy. I've hated him since he's 7. But I certainly remember what he said. You know, it works positive and negative. I absolutely swear by that, I have to say. Chunking lessons, we already talked about this, which is great because I've only got 2 more minutes. That's just chunking it up, making the move and giving them the sense that, you know, oh, it's 4 lessons. It's not 1 lesson, it's 4 lessons. Getting the maximum out of the ability to reconcentrate. Enhancing use of visual memory, that's what you've got in the booklet. Just using those strategies, getting them to find the eye-brain connection and then using that to memorise. Pattern finding. You struggle with lower ability sets to engage them in a sense that they can really say things that matter or things that are more sophisticated. You know, if I'm starting with this ASDAN class, I don't want them to be saying, me llamo David, tengo 15 años, forever. I want them to get the sense that they can comment on stuff. And how do you do that? Use some blinking cognates. Because in the first lesson, you can go, es terrible. Well, actually, not first lesson, because they'll pronounce it es terrible. But after you've had 1 lesson, and you've done all the sounds, if you've done the sounds so that they can read correctly, you can have es terrible. And they, es horrible. And now look, what could they say to that? Oh, they could say, es imposible, couldn't they? And how might we respond to this? Es imposible, no es posible. If we're optimista or pessimista, what are we going to respond? So I engage them in the sense of, what are you going to tell me about world peace today in Spanish? You know, okay, we're not going to have a full-blown conversation about it, but at least you can make a comment to me in Spanish on something that's as important as world peace. Sometimes it's sophisticating, making the material more sophisticated, even if it's only, you know, notionally. Because linguistically, they're not that sophisticated. So, es posible, no es posible. The weather. Look, London, England, full of sun. What are we going to say about that? No es probable. You know, what is that? Brussels sprouts. Es horrible. But, you know, we had fun with this, and you can obviously just put any old pictures in there, but pictures that they're going to be interested in. Or it's going to, you know, philosophy and ethics is the most loved subject at our school. It's the most popular thing at Key Stage 4. Do you know what it is? RE, given a different name. It's the same blinking curriculum. Ooh, am I still being recorded? It's the same curriculum. They've just called it philosophy and ethics. It's the same exam. On the exam paper, it even says RE. But the whole course that they sign up for is called GCSE Philosophy and Ethics. You know, sometimes we have to use some marketing skills. I want to relabel my course is international communications, because I think that sounds a darn sight more exciting than GCSE blinking French. And I'm going to do it, I think. But anyway, patterns. Obviously, these are Spanish examples, because I'm very preoccupied with Spanish at the moment. I do teach French, and I think you can do a lot with these in French, obviously. Cognates, German, lesser extent, but you still can do something. But, you know, these are ones that you can just guess. And it's lovely to tell them, at the end of seeing all these, that they know about 2,000 words. Look how many words we know. Look at all that. You know that word. Then you've got all the eons. They're great, aren't they? Because you can just make those up half the time. Can't you, though? If you're lacking for a Spanish word, you think, oh, can I find a shin word that would do? Oh, if I can, I'm going to just say fion at the end. I use that all the time. Other ones. And although you wouldn't necessarily work through these as a whole lesson, you'd wheel them out every now and then to say, hey, I think we'll just increase our vocabulary by about 50 words today, shall we? What do you think? Let's do it. And then you do them. And that's all of that. Right. Okay, and there I'm going to stop, I do believe. Except, what am I meant to do now? Need to involve the students. Okay, this is really quick. Do an assembly. Get the pupils involved. Get them to create their own links, which is just get them to suggest links between vocabulary. And then lastly, I think this is lovely, and I found this from a little assessing second language vocabulary knowledge. Now, I think it's lovely to put the references on. Again, it's making the material more sophisticated. Look, year eight, I found this in a journal. I read on your behalf. I've done some research for you. Look at what I found out. Let's try this, shall we? Anyway, they do this on words every now and then. So at the beginning of year eight, I gave them some words that I thought they should really know. Some of them they didn't. There's a lot of wastage between year seven and year eight when they go on summer holidays. And they rated the words 1 to 5. I've saved those scores. And next week, I'm going to give them the same thing back. And I'm going to show some progress over time. But I get it for them to say, what is their level of knowledge? How well do they know this word? Not just, don't know that, miss. What do you mean, don't know? What level of don't know? Wouldn't recognize it if it came up and bit you? Or couldn't use it in a sentence? Or could use it in a sentence? I think this is really good to get them thinking about how well they know things. Right. And I know you've got to move on. So thank you very much. I'm sorry it hasn't been very interactive. I've been very interactive, but I know that obviously it must have been hard because it's very warm and you've just had lunch. But thank you very much. I hope it's been useful.